This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Pod Save the Queen!
Hello and welcome to Pod Save the Queen. I'm your host, Zoe Forty, and I'm joined this week by The Mirror's royal writer, Jennifer Newton, because we are going to be discussing what feels like the 10,000th royal book we've had out in quite a while.
Yeah, this year there's been a lot, yeah.
There have been so many. So this is Revenge, Meghan, Harry and the War Between the Windsors, which is the latest biography from Tom Bower. And it is kind of very much a bit what it says on the tin, isn't it? The name gives it away of the vibe of this book. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, definitely. As soon as I heard that this book was going to be called Revenge, I think we all knew what we were in for.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be a nice, happy read.
No, it wasn't. And it has had, shall we say, a bit of a mixed review, but we'll come back to that in a minute. But can you kind of give us a bit of background on who Tom is? Because this is by far his first kind of piece of writing, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's kind of known as a biographer. He's wrote many biographies in the past. He's also a former reporter for the BBC's Panorama. So he's obviously got background in journalism. And some of the subjects that he's tackled so far in his biographies have been Robert Maxwell, Simon Cowell, Richard Branson. And he has also written a royal book as well. He wrote one on Prince Charles and his attempts to recover his popularity a few years ago. So it's not the first time he's dipped his toes into the royal biography world. But yeah, this one was certainly eagerly anticipated.
And there's some huge names as well. And a real kind of broad spectrum as well, you know, politics, showbiz, everything like that. And so, yeah, I wasn't surprised when we heard that he was going to do a Meghan one. It seemed like quite an obvious subject.
Yes, definitely.
But let's quick chat about before we go, because obviously I know you were actually on holiday when the book came out.
I was on
holiday. So you read it, whereas we in the office were reading it kind of really quickly to try and get through to write the story about it. You got to read it by the, like, on holiday, didn't you? Read by the pool?
Yeah, I was on the beach.
That's the way to do it. That's a lot nicer than how I read it. So what did you think of it first off?
Yeah, it was quite a long book, actually. I know that's a very simple thing to say about a book, but yeah, it was quite long. Obviously charted mainly Meghan from, you know, her early days growing up with her parents into a, you know, life as a job and actress, then getting her big break on Suits, and then obviously the story of her and Harry meeting and her introduction to the royal family, and then swift exit. There was a lot in the book that we already knew a little bit. I don't know if you felt
yeah, no, I completely agree. There was lots of it when I was going through, and obviously we were trying to think of the, you know, the new lines that make interesting stories for the Mirror's website and the Daily Mirror and Sunday Mirror papers. But yeah, there were bits that were new, but lots of it was all ground. But then I think that's just because we're royal losers, aren't we, Jen?
Well, that's
we're not the normal reader of these kind of books, because we know far too much about it.
Yeah, that's very true. But I will say there was also an awful lot in that we didn't know, especially, I don't know how if you thought the same, but of her younger life, her grown up, especially when she was an actress, kind of started to, you know, get a little bit of fame when she appeared on Suits and that sort of thing. Some of those stories I hadn't heard before, so that was quite interesting to see what he had to say about that.
Yeah, it's really nice, actually. And obviously, Meghan's spoken a bit about her early days in the actress. It was the Ellen interview, wasn't she, where she spoke about climbing through the boot of the car when she was on her way to an audition. And yeah, it was really nice to hear some of those stories as well. And I think for me, it made me appreciate a bit more the journey that she's come on. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, her dad worked in the industry, so she just walked into it. And it's like, that's not true at all. She worked hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could never be a, you know, want to be actor, actress, because I just don't have a thick enough skin.
Well, no, exactly. And, you know, when you think about it, she worked, I think the book kind of makes this point, for pretty much when she graduated from college in America, it was a good 10 years before she even, you know, got the big break on Suits. She was, you know, in her 30s, if not in her 30s, approaching her 30s. So, you know, her 20s were filled with, you know, having to try
long hours, auditions, and rejections, which is, I know, part of it, but no, it wouldn't be that good. But there has been, I found it very, it was harsh on Megan in lots of places, which has brought it in line for quite a lot of criticism from some readers who obviously take a more positive approach to Megan, whereas others have done so. For anyone who's not read it yet, obviously it's out now, and there's lots to discuss and lots of kind of different points from it. But since the book hit the shelves last week, Tom's actually done a few interviews, hasn't he, including with OK Magazine, which is part of the company that we work for here at Reach. So what's he been saying about it, and kind of is there any extra nuggets he's given?
Yeah, well, he has admitted in this interview that most of the people who helped him with his research with the book were people who were less fond of Megan, shall we say. He said he was keen to talk to like old boyfriends, people who knew her from her acting days. And we already knew this, obviously Harry and Megan didn't have any input into this book whatsoever. And it's not likely that any of their friends or people that work for them currently also talk to him. So I think he definitely spoke to maybe, you know, people from one side of the story,
I do think was really obvious, because for me the two comparisons to this were this book and Finding Freedom.
Yes, definitely.
And they read so differently. But we know the authors of that book spoke to a lot of Harry and Meghan's close friends and people that were very positive, whereas this, you know, I think that could be fair of everyone. Anyone you could write a book about and there'd be two different versions. My best friends in the world, I hope, would give a very different version of me than, you know, people that maybe I've had rows with in the past. So it is interesting, and it is. But it's interesting that he said that and he admitted it, which is, you know, and it's not a bad thing. It's, you know, a way of getting to the truth. Okay, that's really interesting. Was there anything else that you kind of picked up from those interviews?
Yeah, he did say that, you know, even though the book is quite critical, one thing that he was quite, you know, positive to Megan about was that, you know, she has been successful. She has, you know, built a successful career for herself, and she's somehow managed to assume quite a lot of power within, you know, her role. She's definitely, you know, influential at the moment. I mean, people wouldn't ask her to come and, you know, speak at big 100% events and stuff like that. And he says that he doesn't deny her success. So he has said that.
And even though, you know, obviously she was given a royal platform, which is going to give everyone a success, but she really hit the ground running. She went straight into it. Whereas other royals tend to wait, God, sometimes up to a year before they really start using their voice and pushing the campaigns and the causes they want. She did not do that. She was straight in there, which is amazing. And it meant she was actually able to get a lot done, because, you know, we sit there and say, you know, her flying visit to the royal family and she was only in the royals for a couple of years, but she got a lot done in that time, which I think is a real testament to kind of her, you know, how hardworking she is and how driven she is. And it is her career up until that point that probably, you know, gave her that drive. But right, so before we go through talking about all the issues in the book, let's just get the legal bits out of the way, because obviously there's quite a lot of claims made in this book. So we will stress before we begin that everything that we say in this book, all everything in it, it is all kind of it's Tom Bauer's claims. Nothing has been kind of confirmed, you know, nothing is thing. It's all kind of from people he's spoken to. Meghan and Harry were not involved in this book whatsoever. And Buckingham Palace, Clarence House and Kensington Palace have all actually refused to comment on the book. We have been to them to ask if they would like to add anything on the subjects, but they have declined, which is not normal. Unusual. That's what they would normally do. They're kind of, you know, the family motto sticking in, isn't it? Never complain. Now, talk me through what you took away as some of the biggest points. Was there any that really, really jumped out at you?
I suppose one of the biggest points that was made in the book, that was one of the first things that actually came out during the time that it was being serialised, was apparently the Queen's comment that she made on the funeral, on the morning of the funeral of Prince Philip, saying something along the lines of, thank goodness Meghan wasn't coming to the funeral. Obviously, she couldn't come because she was very heavily pregnant with Lilibet at the time. Again, like we said before, Buckingham Palace hasn't commented on these claims, and there has been, you know, some sources close to the Queen questioning whether she would have made this comment, especially, you know, she would have had so much going through her mind that day, or, you know, in the days leading up to the funeral.
Yeah, Meghan probably was not anywhere near her mind.
But, you know, he alleges that the Queen said on the day of the funeral, thank goodness, when she learned that Meghan wasn't coming. So, yeah.
And that's interesting as well, because that suggests that she didn't know, you know, surely they would have known before, but maybe the decision about whether she would attend was a bit later than we realised, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, the other bit that I think came out that I thought was really interesting was... I've got the wrong bit on my notes. I'm very sorry. Right, the crossover I was not expecting to read in a royal book was Meghan Markle versus Victoria Beckham.
No.
So this line that's kind of come from this is that Victoria Beckham, which I'm assuming all of our American listeners know who they are and listeners around the world, but David Beckham is obviously one of the most famous footballers around the whole world, and obviously Victoria Beckham, Posh Spice, as she was known to me, is kind of a someone that grew up in the 90s, obviously part of the Spice Girls. Now, Tom says that the Sussexes were addicted to reading negative press coverage about themselves, and they used to spend hours in the evening scrolling through social media, scrolling through news reports, which is something they've actually said they haven't done before, but you know, there's been lots of contrasting reports about this. So the couple said to be worried that their close friends were leaking stories about them. And apparently, Meghan believed that Victoria Beckham was one of the people leaking stories, or was, well, accused her of indiscretion. So Prince Harry called David Beckham to ask him what was going on. Now, obviously, Harry and William have both been really close to the Beckhams over the years because, you know, he's been he's involved in so many of their charities. Obviously, they're really involved in the FA and just... He's just a national treasure, and he's, you know, he's everywhere that he's at lots of royal events.
Yeah, they both went to the, if you remember, yeah, Victoria of course, and David both were at, both William
they
and
went to both weddings. And obviously David's got an OBE, he got that back in 2003, so he was really close with all the royals. So Harry and David Beckham have a really strong, I'm calling him David as if we're pals. Harry and Dave have got a really close friendship. But apparently after this accusation that Meghan made, they had this really awkward phone conversation. And the line in the book was that Harry is very protective of Meghan, and he decided to deal with the matter head on by directly contacting his good pal. Quite rightly, he put Harry right, and the two men agreed to move on, but it certainly made things awkward for a while. So it does seem that there was a bit of tension between the two couples, which is a real shame.
Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, the book does say the two men agreed to move on, so maybe they've put that behind them now. I know Meghan has worn Victoria Beckham's clothes. Obviously, she's a fashion designer in the past, so hopefully, you know, maybe that's not an issue now, but according to the book, it was an issue at the time. And, you know, it goes to show that maybe, you know, well, as what Tom Bauer is alleging, that they, the Sussexes certainly were, you know, were reading a lot of stuff about themselves in the press, whether that be good or bad.
And another claim that stood out for me, and this is something that's been discussed a lot over the time, is that Meghan, lots of Meghan's friends were concerned when she started dating a royal.
Yeah.
Which I think is fair enough.
Yeah.
I would be worried if one of my friends said, knowing that the fact that, you know, your life will never be the same again. You will be constantly in the spotlight.
Yeah.
But apparently, according to the book, Meghan snapped at one of her pals when she expressed her fears, mainly, you know, kind of, I think, being fed up of hearing it. I suppose if you're getting it from every side, you want to be excited for a new relationship,
exactly,
don't you?
Yeah.
So apparently said, Gina, save it. Stop, be quiet. I don't want to hear any negativity. This is a happy time for us.
Yeah.
Which, again, isn't, I don't think, yeah, that I think sounds about right. You know, if you're getting every single person you speak to says, no, and you're convinced this is your love of your life.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
I mean, you don't know how many times earlier that day, maybe. That,
yeah.
How many similar conversations? And you know what it's like. Yeah. When someone keeps telling you something you don't want to hear.
Exactly. All she wants to do is talk about a nice date night the night before and be all excited. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. What else for you? Give me another highlight for you.
Well, one highlight. Highlight that I found quite amusing, really, was that apparently, according to the book, the palace were approving the scripts for Suits.
So this obviously, because she carried on while they were dating, she carried on in her role as Rachel Zane.
Yep.
And it wasn't until things got a bit serious that she quit. And that's when she closed down the TIG. And that's when I think we all started prepping our Meghan and Harry engaged stories. Definitely. But yeah, so it was the times before she quit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was while she was still on Suits. I think they still had maybe a series or two of Meghan being in the show to go. And it said that scripts for Suits were sent to Kensington Palace for approval and requests for changes were sent from London to LA, and there were strict requirements for Meghan's final scene. Now, I don't know if you watched Suits.
I did watch Suits.
I watched Suits. I've got to say, I actually quite enjoyed Suits.
I loved Suits, and I watched it before Meghan was Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. And I must admit, I probably would have like cashed out a bit, and it was only then because she was Meghan Markle and I needed to follow her for work reasons.
Yeah.
But the final was the wedding, wasn't it?
The final scene was Meghan's character, Rachel, marrying Mike Ross. He was called, wasn't he? Yeah. Mike. And obviously she was...
I used to love Mike Ross.
Yeah. I was a Harvey fan.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, yeah. No, not at all.
But never mind. So the final scene was a wedding. Obviously she was going to be pictured in a dress. And imagine if she was pictured wearing a dress.
Yeah.
You know, even before any, you know, talk of engagement. And it was said that she wasn't allowed to be photographed wearing the dress and had to cover it with a jacket in between scenes.
Which does make sense, because even the clips of her in the show, those photos were used everywhere.
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
So it makes sense, just to see her walking down the thing would have been different. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting as well. Right, Jen, talk to me about dinosaurs.
The dinosaurs.
This was the bit that you weren't here, but my colleague who was going through the book with me actually burst out laughing when she saw this bit. It was just, again, not what I was expecting to read.
No, not about Meghan wanting to be with the dinosaurs, but never. Yeah, basically, when Meghan did move to London, obviously, when in the early days of her relationship with Harry, she became a big fan of the Natural History Museum in London, which I don't blame her for, because it's
amazing. It's and to go on a private visit would be the dream.
Yeah, so Tom Bower claims in the book that Harry arranged for them to visit the Natural History Museum after hours, so kind of like a night at the museum kind of date, because, and this is what the book quotes, Meghan wanted to commune with the dinosaurs in private.
There you go.
Why not?
If you've got that royal, you know, pass, 100%, I would not be there with, you know, six school trips of children running around, exactly, which is what it does tend to be like. So, fair play to them. I would fully be, fully doing that too. One of the kind of slightly less positive lines from it was that Harry changed his phone number and apparently didn't tell the royals he was doing it. And Tom says that this confirmed William's fears that Meghan was becoming a diversive agent. Yeah. So to please her, Harry had split from his old friends and had even changed his telephone number without telling his family.
Yeah.
Now, there have been loads of stories before about Harry kind of drifted away from some of the friends he'd been, and some of his really loyal friends that had been by his side since he was a kid, because obviously, you know, Harry and William are both really close with their Eton friends. But the fact that he changed his number and didn't tell, didn't tell some of those closest to him, I think is really interesting and really sad if it is true, because they're people that have helped him through some of the hardest times of his life.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I mean, if, yeah, like you say, it's just a sad situation that it kind of came to that. And I mean, I don't think it's any sort of claim anymore that there is a rift between William and Harry.
I think it's definitely there.
Say for certain that is the case now. And I don't think anyone can say, no matter, you know, who you think is in the right or the wrong, that it's just not a sad situation all around.
Now, speaking of Prince Harry's friends and people in their wider circle, one of the lines from this book that actually made me really like Meg, well, I like Meghan anyway, but really like her more, was that apparently in some of, obviously don't know who it is, but in some of Harry's friendship groups or social groups, should we say more, there were allegedly jokes about sex, like sexist jokes, jokes about transgender people and feminism. And Meghan basically challenged them and said, that's not okay. You know, you shouldn't say that, which I think is a really amazing thing to do and something we all need to do more of. It. I know I mentioned this briefly in last week's podcast, but apparently the conversations took part at a shooting party in Sandringham in 2016. So this would have been really quite early on in their relationship.
Very early on.
So potentially even one of the first meetings, because obviously they were doing long distance for a while. And the book says he had not anticipated Meghan's reaction. Their jokes involving sexism, feminism and transgender people ricketed around living rooms and dining rooms. Without hesitation, Meghan challenged every guest whose conversation went against her values. And so I really, this is something that everyone should obviously be doing. And however, lots of us don't have the confidence, which is completely wrong of us, but to say in a group of people you don't know, in a situation you're not as comfortable in, to kind of say, actually, I'm not happy with that. And it's something obviously, you know, you should do and you try to do, but, you know, mine normally comes out with a bit of a, I'm not really, you know, and you know, we need people to be challenging these arguments, challenging these points, and people just dropping these comments. And to know that Meghan does that, I think is really amazing and very on brand with what we'd expect from her, but nice to hear that, it, you know, it's happened, been happening for so long.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, and this isn't in a bad way at all. It shows kind of her confidence as well, you know, her self-confident. Like if she didn't mind putting herself out there to say in a group of people who, you know, you hadn't met before, to say, no, this isn't okay. This is not okay. You've got to, you know, think about things before you make jokes about at the expense of, you know, these issues.
So, No, I think it was a really nice point in the book. And a couple of others that I mentioned on the podcast last week, because obviously we'd had the extract by the last time we spoke down and chatted. Keen for photos of her feet to be edited. Again, another one I wasn't quite expecting to see. But apparently when she was doing a kind of, this is again, obviously pre-royal, when she was doing some modelling shoots and she was wearing open-toe sandals, she asked for them to be touched up post-production. Please fix my feet for me. I get slaughtered online for people picking apart my feet.
I mean, if everyone's got disposal, why not use it?
Exactly. And it isn't, you know, one of the most beautiful women in the world. I just share everyone's got their little things.
Everyone's got some hang-up
that they're that they're not overly happy with. And no Strictly Come Dancing.
I'm a massive fan of Strictly. that was quite a fun part of the book to read that. She had to turn down taking part in Strictly Come Dancing because obviously it clashed with the filming of Suits. Obviously, if you get far in Strictly, you're in it for like, what, two, three months?
Oh, yeah, it's ages.
So, yeah, it would have clashed with her filming schedule for Suits in Toronto. But yeah, that would have been quite
That would have been so weird. Imagine if kind of future princess dancing around there. Who would you have partnered her up with?
Strictly's all about the height, isn't it?
That's true.
Giovanni?
Giovanni, would have been a good one. That was a very good shout. Very good shout. Other lines that we had in this one was another tense call from the Queen. Involving Meghan, but also the Queen and Charles. What do we know about this one?
So apparently, according to the book, as we said, the Queen and Prince Charles were left exasperated by Meghan's father, Thomas. Obviously, you know, we have spoke on this podcast so many times in the past about the lead up to the wedding, you know, how he couldn't attend because there was this whole issue with the stage paparazzi photos, him apparently taken ill, having to be taken to hospital. It obviously ended up that he didn't attend the wedding. And then he started, you know, speaking to the press about different things. Obviously, Harry and Meghan didn't want him to do that. And apparently the Queen and Charles were left exasperated by his antics, and, you know, kind of said to Meghan, you know, can you not just go and, you know, have a chat with your dad, go to where he lives in Mexico and just kind of, you know, sort this out. But apparently Meghan responded, this is what the book says, it was quoted her as saying, it was completely unrealistic to think I could fly discreetly to Mexico, arrive unannounced at his doorstep to a location and residence I had never visited or known in a small border town, and somehow speak privately to my father without causing a frenzy of media attention and intrusion that could bring more embarrassment to the royal family.
Which I think is completely the, unfortunately, you know, however lovely it would be to see, no one wants a family, no, not on speaking terms, but what we've learned from Thomas Markle in the months since the wedding is that,
yeah,
he will talk about when she does make contact. So I,
yeah,
to be honest, my opinion of it is that if she had gone and had that meeting, we would know every single detail of it by, yeah, now.
And I mean, for the Queen and Prince Charles as well, you know, I mean, I know they said they were exasperated by his antics, but maybe they just wanted her, you know, maybe they just wanted her to build that relationship,
yeah,
back with her father as well. It's, I think it's just such a difficult situation all round for all concerned, really, royals and the Markle family as well.
Yeah, and it does hope, you know, it does show, I think, that the royals, despite the risks of what could come from that, really did want Meghan to have,
yeah,
that relationship with her father.
Yeah.
You know, there's been lots of you know, comments, and that they just, you know, cut them out completely, yeah, and were like, right, she's one of our family now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it is interesting to know that they were pushing for her to have that relationship, yeah, with her dad.
Exactly.
And how important that is, and having the support. I guess obviously they know with the Cambridges,
yeah,
with the support that the Middleton family offer, not just Kate, but also William.
Yeah.
So maybe they were hoping for a bit of that, but
yeah.
Very, unfortunately, very, very different circumstances.
Yeah.
Now, there's, again, something that's been mentioned before, but a bit more detail here, is because, you know, there's been lots of talk. Meghan said before that she didn't really know too much about the British royal family before, but some more comments in that which suggest that might not be the case.
Yeah, well, I think, well, I definitely have seen it before. You probably definitely have as well. The picture of Meghan as a teenager
outside the palace.
Which,
yeah.
Which to some you could go, well, yeah, clearly she's a royal fan, but, you know, on the other side of the coin, who doesn't come to London and
you
get
come
a
to
picture?
Yeah, you come to London, you take outside, your picture outside that. Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, that trip to London was with a childhood friend, and that photo was taken just 1 year before the sad death of Princess Diana. And, you know, Tom Bower claims in this book that Meghan, after this trip, rewatched a tape of Diana's 1981 wedding to Prince Charles and read a copy of Diana, Her True Story, the Andrew Morton book, discussing the breakdown of her marriage. And, you know, the friend that she made this trip with said Meghan was always fascinated by the royal family and Diana's incredible humanitarian work, with working with people who suffered from HIV, and, you know, the really important campaign she did with landmines. So, which kind of, you know, contradicts some of the statements Meghan's made, that she knew nothing about the royal family, that she'd never, you know, looked into them, researched them, you know, Googled them, didn't know anything about Harry. So, yeah, that's another thing, isn't it? One person saying one thing and one,
yeah,
person saying another. So, yeah.
And that in itself is in no way a negative thing. You know, Diana was an incredible woman that did, yeah, so much, that was an inspiration to so many people. And the fact that, you know, a young, well, you know, Meghan was a child at that point,
yeah,
looked to this woman, this, you know, kind of strong female role model, is exactly what we'd expect from her, and is an amazing thing. It's not an, you know, it's just the fact that it is against the comments of her saying she never knew anything about the royals,
yeah,
that makes it sound like a negative thing. But it's not. I think it's really lovely,
yeah,
that Meghan, before she had any links to the royals, looked up to Harry's mum,
yeah,
in this way. I think it's, yeah, a really sweet link. And yeah, in any other setting, it would be a really lovely detail. But unfortunately, yeah, as so much stuff does, it just ends up with a bit of a negative,
yeah,
and ring to it.
I suppose as well, Diana was such a big, you know, superstar, not only in the UK, but globally. It would be a bit unbelievable to think that Meghan had never heard of her or never read a story about Diana. Like, that's just what my opinion, but yeah.
It really, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a hard one. And I think maybe that quote, perhaps, I always thought was maybe taken a bit too literally. You know, there's, yeah, a difference between knowing who Princess Diana was and knowing she had a big wedding and did amazing charity work, and knowing that if you're a member of the royal family, you get followed around constantly and everyone is quite obsessed with you. But there we go. Were there any other bits and bobs you wanted to mention? Sorry if you can hear paper, by the way. Dan's going to shout at me because we've both got notes on the table. So we are shuffling away to make sure we get all the details exactly right. So sorry, Dan. Was there anything else you wanted to mention, or have we covered it all?
I think one thing that we haven't covered, one pretty recent thing that the book mentions, is the supposed row over the Jubilee. And
Of course.
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, we had the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. It was such a great weekend. So Harry and Meghan returned to the UK for the celebrations with Archie and Lilibet. And if you remember at Trooping the Colour, they had the normal balcony appearance, but was limited to working royals only.
Yes, and that decision in the weeks before was a huge talking point, wasn't it? And this is when Harry hadn't quite decided if he was going to come home. And then the Queen put out the statement to say it would only be the very senior lot, which kind of meant that I guess there wasn't the decision about whether Andrew would be there and whether Meghan and Harry would be there. There was obviously lots of conversation about that and lots of people saying, well, if they're coming all this way, are we ever going to see them?
Tom Bower writes in the book that Harry and Meghan made a demand to appear with the Queen on the Buckingham Palace balcony during the Platinum Jubilee celebrations last month. But it was Prince Charles who reportedly opposed this arrangement. And over the weekend, we were the same. We were keen to see them quite a lot at these celebrations, getting involved with the family. But we only really saw them that one kind of short public appearance at St. Paul's Cathedral. And in the book, it says that festering was their fury, Harry and Meghan's fury, that the palace had refused all of their demands for a prominent role at the Jubilee. And he puts this down to the fact that in Meghan's view, those optics were unsatisfactory, partly because of her value to Netflix was to stand near to the Queen. But Clarence House has declined to comment on the book, so we'll never know.
Never know.
Prince Charles actually, if this happened and Prince Charles reportedly, you know, stepped in and said no.
That's what there's so many reports about, weren't they? Because apparently Netflix wanted to get all this brand new content for this, all these TV shows that we may or may not ever see. And we're still desperately waiting to hear more on them. And obviously there's the, you know, I know we've got the Invictus Games stuff coming, but, and then we didn't really see any of it at all, which was interesting, but I'm sure we will find out.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I think it is a really interesting read.
Yeah.
It, as you said, has had kind of some mixed reviews, but lots of people are, it's so interesting. There's so many details on it, as well as obviously focusing on Meghan. It does touch on the whole royal family as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Both their kind of short time in there and what they've been up to since, which is really lovely. So if anyone hasn't read it yet, this is Tom Bower's autobiography. Oh, no, it's not his autobiography. It's Tom Bower's biography, Revenge, Meghan, Harry and the War Between the Windsors. And you can get it online, bookshops, pretty much everywhere, which is lovely. Now, I'm going to put you completely on the spot here. Sorry, Jen, because I've also realised we haven't spoken about Prince George's birthday on the podcast yet, because that was over the weekend. Oh, and we had another photo, didn't we? Another photo from Kate.
Yeah, lovely picture of George giving a big toothy grin.
Which is really cute.
Yeah.
And I normally roll my eyes at these stories of, you know, royal looks like another family member.
Yeah.
Shock, you know.
Yeah.
Son looks like his dad. Yeah. But he did look a lot like William in this one, didn't he?
When you put the pictures of William as a 9-year-old boy next to George, you know, it could be the same. It could be the same boy, basically.
It really was. I think it's like the teeth and the smile he's got that blonde hair. It was really nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was lovely.
That was really cute. And it was another one. Was it taken by Kate again?
It was taken by Kate it just said on a beach in the UK on a family holiday. So yet to know where they went on holiday, but wherever it was, it looked pretty nice. So,
it did. Yeah. And it looked like a really recent photo, doesn't it? You know, when kids are at that age where a picture taken in, you know, the Easter holidays and the summer holidays, they've grown about 4 inches. So it did look like maybe it was an early summer break.
Yeah, possibly, you know.
Yeah, he had a t-shirt on.
Yeah, kids broke up from school, didn't they, just a few weeks ago.
Yes.
So maybe, you know, they finished school and headed off for a little break. So
very nice. Lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Jen. It was lovely to have a catch up. Thank you to everyone for listening this week. As always, we are on social media, Twitter and Instagram at PodSave. And until next time.
Pod Save the Queen!